one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
Swung on,
did it,
crushed, and the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss. Struck him out.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. And coming up, it is our 2026 Phillies Major League Baseball preview episode spectacular. We're going to break down who we think is going to win all the divisions, who's going to win all the major awards. We've got some Phillies predictions in there as well. We'll let you also know how far we think the Phillies are going to go here in 2026. And we're also going to talk a little bit about John Middleton. John had some things to say this week about some of the changes at the ballpark, and you'd be surprised to hear probably that they were not exactly the most read-the-room intelligent comments that you could possibly hear. So we'll get to all that stuff here, and we'll set up the fact that it's Phillies opening day coming up here on Thursday at Citizens Bank Park. So lots to get to here on this midweek roundtable edition of the podcast. Justin Clue and Liz Rocher are joining me for this huge episode we do every year. We've been doing it every year for like the last 10 years doing these episodes together. And so we are ready for another Phillies season, action packed. Will it be a championship season? Probably not, but we're going to be here for it anyway. Justin, of course, from Baseball Prospectus. You can follow him on Blue Sky at Justin Clue. And I hope by now you have purchased Summer of the Cheap Wieners. If you missed it, The Good Fight has an article up today about Summer of the Cheap Wieners featuring Justin's book. So make sure you check that out as well. Justin, how you feeling, buddy?
Very good. Yeah, thank you to Ethan Witte and Joe Ettinger and Jared Frank over at The Good Fight. They all were interested in reading. And I was invited to just write a little something about the book and my motivations for it and everything. And yeah, I haven't written for The Good Fight in a long time. Good to be back.
Like we've missed you, buddy.
For even just a little while. That was very nice. Very familiar. I want to say that, we've spent a lot of this winter and this off season kind of talking about what are ways we can easily imagine things going for the Phillies. I don't think anybody here, though, would argue that this spring has gone pretty smoothly for this team. But I think everybody needs that moment coming out of the winter and into baseball where things stop being about, what the team has or hasn't done and start being about how baseball is just back. And I just returned from Clearwater. I got to catch the last weekend of action when the players had returned from the WBC. I saw the spring breakout game. But most importantly, that moment arrived in the game before where Justin Crawford came up and hit exactly the kind of triple that I've been imagining him hitting as a member of this offense. And his spring has been, I don't know, you can't really complain. You're seeing a kid learning, to play a position in the major leagues, and I feel like it's been going pretty well, even if you can point to some areas where he still needs to work. Yeah, he's going to need to work. But he hit this triple that was just, a low line drive that was basically a ground ball by the time it was in the outfield, clatters into the corner. And that's one of my favorite ballpark moments when a guy is chugging towards second and everybody just collectively realizes this is the moment this is becoming a triple, like, or he's going for it. And that moment arrived. It was like the hair on the back of your neck stood up. And then you just heard somebody scream, "He's so fast." And you remembered you're about to see how fast this kid is. And he just blasts through second base and goes into a full Superman dive, sliding to third safe by a mile. And you're just imagining, like, this is the Justin Crawford I was talking about when I said, yeah, we're dinging him for that ground ball percentage. We're dinging him for the shortcomings as an outfielder, but the kid can still play. That's why he's getting his chance. And he proved that even when he doesn't get the ball too far off the ground, he can still use that speed to do exactly what you want him to do. So I got very excited, and that was my moment this year that really re-entered me into baseball excitement. And I'm ready. I'm ready for it now.
I think he did that off Tarek Skubal, did he not?
Wasn't he hit it off Tarek Skubal is an important detail as well. Yes, absolutely.
That's so. Lefty on lefty and maybe the best pitcher in baseball. So, that was pretty exciting. And everybody probably has one of those moments during the course of the offseason. I think mine was the Bryce Harper World Baseball Classic moment. That was the moment I kind of clicked in for me. I was like, okay, I remember what this feels like now. Well, let's play some ball. Let's get out there and let's throw the pee around. Liz Rocher, editor of Sabres Baseball Research Journal. You can follow her on X and Blue Sky at Liz Rocher. Liz, do you have a moment like that yet? Are you still waiting for that first initiation, you think?
Mine was the Schwarber home run in the WBC. He just sort of, yeah, a little. I mean, he just stepped in, and it was like no time had passed. He looked the same. It sounded the same, and to me, it felt the same. I mean, it's exactly what I wanted to see after such a great and productive season he had. That he's just like up there casually, like, yeah, I'm gonna hit a home run every however many at bats. Just get ready for it.
I think we've talked about it before, but, you know, Ryan Howard, he does the slide step, and you were like, all right, well, even if I didn't think that was going off the bat, that's gone, because he never was wrong when he did that. Schwarber, it's not a step, it's the face. It's this face. Yeah. Eyes are closed. Yeah. His lips go out like he feels real bad about what he just did. And seeing that face again was like, that'll play.
You can always tell when Kyle's got one. I mean, you really just can. You know, he never like hits one and you're like, and he starts busting it out of the box. Like, oh gosh, I don't know if that one's going to get out. You know, no. When Schwarber gets one, he knows he's got it. And he stands there for just maybe like a half a second at the plate. Like, he'll come back, he'll swing, and then he'll kind of snap the bat back and hold it in his hands and look for just a half a second. But then in that half second, you know, he's not watching the center fielder to see if he's going to track it down at the warning track. He's watching to see how far that thing hits up the brick wall and the ivy at Citizens Bank Park. And that's my favorite Kyle Schwarber thing when he does that. There have been a couple of home runs, big home runs, where I'm like, oh, did he get that? And as soon as I see it, I say, oh, okay, yeah, he got it. I'm just look at the man. He knows he got it. So that's a good one, too. And, you know, we'll probably get a lot of those here in the 2026 season. And I will say this, just before we talk about the John Middleton stuff, I feel a lot better about this team now than I did at the start of spring training. Just you said it, Justin, a lot of things just went well. They didn't really have anything go poorly for them. They certainly had a better training camp, spring training, than the Atlanta Braves have had. You know, the Mets seem to be working different guys in. Sean Manaea is going to start the season in the bullpen because he's throwing 88 miles an hour. I mean, so the two division rivals, they're having some issues right now. And all the question marks the Phillies have had so far have been answered positively. Now, of course, it's just the spring, but, you know, it's Zach Wheeler. It's Aaron Nola. It's Justin Crawford. It's Andrew Painter. You know, even Bryson Stott and Alec Bohm have looked pretty good this spring. Adolis Garcia was heating up at the end of the spring. Lizardo and Sanchez both got contract extensions and are pitching lights out in the spring. I mean, again, it's all spring, but the worry is you go into a season with some ominous signs, and there's none of that for the Phillies right now. So I don't see, if you're watching this team, how you can't feel pretty good about the way they're entering the 2026 season. So,
as we discussed on another show yesterday, there was across all of sports media, you're getting a lot of power rankings right now, and you're getting a good view of how other people are viewing the Phillies, just nationally, outside of the normal Philadelphia circles. And you're just seeing the Phillies kind of get dropped in like fifth or sixth best team in baseball territory. Like, some people rank the Mets a little higher, some people rank the Blue Jays a little higher, but I mean, that's generally where you want to be, because, you know, higher than that, it's like the pressure's on, the scrutiny's on. If you're like fifth or sixth best, I mean, you still got room to like improve and, you know, be something of an underdog among the contenders. And it just feels safer and more realistic. It's a more grounded take on contention, you might say, than the Dodgers, who are just living in another galaxy.
I agree. And we're going to get into our specific division winner picks and who we think is going to make the wild cards, and give our playoff predictions as well coming up here in just a few minutes. And we'll talk more about the Phillies and how we see their season shaping up. But I did want to get to, for those of you who have been paying attention to some of the things that were announced about Citizens Bank Park here in 2026, a lot of conversation among Phillies fans over the last 48 hours as we're recording this here on Wednesday about some of the really two notable changes, and just the response by John Middleton in particular about these changes. Some tone deaf comments, as far as I'm concerned, from the Phillies owner. The first is Harry the K's being changed to a pavilion sponsored by Ghost Energy Drinks. John Middleton, talking about this, said, the money that apparently the Phillies were paying the Callis family for Harry's, to use Harry's name on this pavilion before. And he was saying the money that we save from paying the Callis family is going to maybe buy some napkins or something like that. It's not like serious, serious money. We're not going to go out and buy a new player. Now, the money that Ghost is paying us, that could fund a player. I mean, if you want a $300 million payroll, you need a $600 million plus of revenue. you're looking for money everywhere. And if you go, by the way, if you go to Yankee Stadium, you go to Dodger Stadium, I mean, it's all over the place. But that's modern baseball. Modern. The cost of doing business. He also said, talking about how fans are feeling, he says, well, you know, look, I get it. There's an emotion to that. But there's a 7-foot statue of the guy, meaning Harry Callis, in left field. The broadcast booth is named after him, and he has a plaque. I mean, it's not like we're not honoring his legacy, and it's not like we're not going to continue to honor his legacy during the future. Okay, so that's the Harry.
Did you know what he was doing when he was speaking?
Did he feel like he was honoring his legacy by calling him the guy in the middle
of this
interview?
The guy. That bothered me. Yeah. Yeah. And then he went on a rant about how we don't, how no one has done anything for Bai Sam, who is the longtime Phillies broadcaster before Harry Callis. And there's no Bai Sam Pavilion. And I grew up with Bai Sam at Connie Mack Stadium. But I want to hold on for just a second because. I thought it was very interesting that he's talking about Bai Sam and how he's nostalgic for Bai Sam. And yet, one of the other things that the Phillies are going to do is remove the analog clock that sits in center field that is a replica of the clock that was in right field from Connie Mack Stadium, the stadium that John Middleton went to growing up. It's been there since the park opened in 2004. It's being replaced with branding for the All-Star Game. And he says, I mean, look, I'm 71 years old. I understand what that clock is. How many people do you think sat in Connie Mack Stadium? And if the people who sat in Connie Mack Stadium, how many people would remember the clock on the top of the Budweiser scoreboard in right field? Honestly, I'm telling you, if you ask the 3.375 million people who came through our ballpark last year, pardon me, how many of those people do you think would know that clock represents the clock on top of the right field scoreboard? And seriously, 5%? 10%? Do you think the nostalgia will be missed in 20 years? No. The world changes. You get new fans, new customers, you know? There are younger people who look at that and say, why is that there? I've got my phone. I don't need a clock. Why is it there? Who cares? So
somebody's billionaire side is coming out.
Billionaire side
more, somebody's a little more of a billionaire than a Phillies fan, it turns out. Oh, who would have guessed?
I just thought you can't on one hand talk about the Harry Callis thing and say it's okay by talking about Bai Sam and the love of Bai Sam and the tradition of Bai Sam and we don't have anything about Bai Sam. And then at the same time say, well, who cares about the clock from Connie Mack Stadium? Nobody cares about Connie Mack Stadium. Nobody was aware of Connie Mack Stadium or what was in Connie Mack Stadium. We got to get in with the new. We got to get in with the now. We got to be hip. We got to be relevant. We got to be with it. We got to do what the kids are doing nowadays.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, half the people think that's Ben Franklin on top of City Hall. Do you think it matters who William Penn is? Probably not, right? Because nobody around was born while he was alive anymore. So,
I mean, we've got Independence Hall. Let's bulldoze that and let Ghost Energy Drink build a pavilion.
Here's the thing.
Ghost Energy Drink was founded by a guy from Westchester, which is why this is all happening. So, at least there's a connection there. But I don't know why he didn't mention that anywhere, really. Or maybe he did, and I don't know, but.
This really isn't a big deal, I hesitate to say. But right. this response, this could have been handled so much better. I don't think he talked to anyone about what he was going to say, because he would have been corrected at some point. Few people are on the level of Harry Callis in Philadelphia. Who is? Ben Franklin?
Like
William
in
Penn?
In the history of Philadelphians. Yeah, I agree. Totally.
So where he's absolutely right is, you know, he's got a statue, you know, of course, that is a main part of the stadium. The broadcast booth is, of course, named after him. The plaque. Yes, there are plenty of honors for Harry Callis, as there should be. He is a part of that stadium. He gets the it's out of here call and you get the sing high hopes at the end of the game. Yes, there's no shortage of Harry Callis stuff, but you got to understand, if you're in the city of Philadelphia and you're painting over the name Harry Callis, you're going to hear from people. No matter how small it is. And if your response is to do is to take this condescending, like you said, tone deaf, just genuinely ignorant response where you're like tough guying people about their complaints. All you're really like, I think if this just reads like he's just like sick of hearing it and that more things like this are going to happen. And it's a shame because, like I said, I think he's completely right. But at the same time, if somebody came along and said, we want to put an ad on the face of that Harry Callis statue and we will give you X amount of dollars, if they hit the right amount of money, he would say yes to that. Based on the intelligence he showed in this interview, it sounds like, yeah, the right amount of money, I would do that. And all we're seeing is more and more of this kind of stuff happening at Citizens Bank Park. And we all know why. And we all want the team to be better and have, you know, the money they need to keep getting better and be competitive. But I also like how he sets it up. Like, well, you know, the money we were getting from the Callis family, or we were giving the Callis family, that doesn't really buy us a whole lot. But Ghost Energy drinks, that's going to buy us a lot. Okay. You better go out and get somebody now, because now we all know you got the money to do it. Are you going to do that, John? Or are you going to be scared of the luxury tax? Just kidding. You and the rest of your buddies are going to bring baseball to a grinding halt in a couple of months. So this is all a moot point.
You know where history is more important than some other cities? Philadelphia. It's like the center of where American history began in an official sense. I mean, there's sites all up and down the East Coast that could claim that, but like Philadelphia is where the Declaration of Independence was actually signed. History is tremendously important to this city. But do you know what organization has done a terrible job at protecting their own history? And the Phillies, when they moved stadiums in 2004, they threw away so much stuff. My good friend, I think everyone's good friend Cole from the internet, Phillies fan, we all know him, has lamented this so many times. They threw away so much of their stuff that is like important to Phillies history. And so like the Phillies have never cared about their history to begin with. And so this is just sort of perfectly in concert with that. And I think Justice Wright, there isn't anything really wrong with it. But saying this stuff, like, I feel like I have to go through this point by point. Because if you're not paying them that much money, then why are you stopping? If you, it's been shown that money, that revenue from tickets and other stadium stuff does not directly affect payroll. Because the one thing that affects payroll is the luxury tax. See, what else did he say? If you go to, modern branding is everywhere. Yeah, it is. But the point is to preserve some of the Phillies' history. The Phillies are the longest single name, single city franchise in baseball history?
Yeah, in sports history, I think.
In sports history. That's hugely important. And the Phillies don't seem to care about that. Clock is meaningful. And if kids don't know what things are, yeah, they have phones, they don't need a clock. A clock is not a huge deal. But you know what? They don't know who Harry the K is. They could turn to whoever they're with and say, hey, who is that? They could look at their phone and look it up, which is what everyone I know does when they don't know something. Whether they find the right answer is a different story. But they at least show curiosity about it. Like, do you know who's in charge of memorializing past Phillies players and staff? His name is John Middleton. So if he wants to honor by some, he's in charge of that and could say, hey, you guys, why don't we do this? Give me a date. Give me a program. And that's how it works. That's how it works. This is like the worst thing he could have said at any point. Like, this is rivaling stupid money. Another thing that worked out hugely poorly for him.
Yeah, it flies in the face of his "I'm a fan" persona as well, and that's
because he's not.
That's the thing. Well, I don't agree. I think he's a fan, but I think right now it's certainly more about the money than about fandom.
He's turning back into an owner because they didn't win a World Series title, and I think he's less of a fan and more of an owner now.
That's probably 100% true. And again, Liz is right. It's all about, you know, the luxury tax and, you know, the reluctance to spend money. They could be raking in gajillions of dollars and he's still not going to pay all that dead tax money. But I think it's just a lot of the arguments were disingenuous too. Nobody cared about the clock as a timepiece. It was a relic and it's something about the park that made it authentic. It's like when they got rid of the brick and the traditional scoreboard ahead of last season and put in the video board so they could do what? Sell ads on it, right? It's just, it's, it's just that that's the part of it to me that's disappointing, is like you're taking something that had these old school charms to it, and you're just going to make it into a Nationals park if you're not careful. You're going to turn it into some generic, bland thing where, yes, maybe you can sell every inch of the place to someone in order to increase your revenue by a couple tens of millions or $100 million or whatever it is. But you're also stripping away some of the stuff from the park that made it unique, that made it special. And I remember going to the vet, and when I'd see that little star with the S on it up in the 700 level, that was supposedly where Willie Stargell had once hit a home run. Did I know what that was all about when I was going to the game at first? No. So you know what I did? I asked the people who were with me, what's that S in the star in the 600 level all about? Oh, well, that's where Willie Stargell hit the longest home run in Veterans Stadium one time. That's how you grow a love for the game, especially for kids who, yes, don't know who Harry the K is. It gets you, who's Harry Callis? Oh boy, let me play some call, let me play some Harry Callis calls for you. And then you go down a rabbit hole where this kid, where you got your kid look watching some of the best moments in Phillies history called by Harry Callis. I mean, that's how these things go. So I agree with you, Justin. I think I get it, you know, like if you want to change the name of Harry the K's and you want to sell it to Ghost Energy Drinks and do these things, you know, that is, he's well within his rights to do it. But don't get upset about backlash, especially with Harry Callis. That's just stupid.
This was clearly prepared, too. And I mean, look, Harry the K's was not a good restaurant. I don't think I've ever heard someone say, what should I do if I go to Citizens Bank Park? Oh, you got to go to Harry the K's and pay $21 for a 16 ounce beer. It's going to be fantastic. Best part of your trip. No, you don't need to do that. It's a bad restaurant. And furthermore, Harry wouldn't have hung out there. Not his kind of place. So again, this didn't have to really be a big deal. But the whole concept of this doesn't need to exist because no one remembers it is just a really rich philosophy to be thrown out there. The year you're hosting the All-Star Game for the 250th anniversary of America, which you're hosting because the previous owner, who never stopped being a fan, felt so strongly about doing that. So I don't want to like reach too far here and make too much out of this, because again, it just didn't have to be a big deal. But maybe it's because somebody on this show recently wrote a whole book about Philly's history. But this stuff does matter, and it is important. And yes, John, you're absolutely right that being told about the legacy, like the fact that less people remember it, kind of might be the reason it definitely should exist, so that people continue to remember it or pass it down the way history is supposed to work. But again, I don't want to overreach here, because all we're talking about is, you know, Harry's name coming off a restaurant that nobody really felt that strongly about anyway.
They could have named, just to prevent backlash, they could have named something else in the park after him. There's so much stuff in the park that it, you know, still does not have a sponsor on it.
You're talking about Harry?
There's still, they could have.
And that's what I'm agreeing with. He pointed out so many things that are named after Harry Callis that are absolutely enough.
Exactly. But like, people are annoyed that you're taking it down and putting it up for Ghost Energy. Then name something else after him. Be like, we're going to name all of the benches after Harry Callis. You know, we're going to do this or that, you know, like just something to show that they still care. Because if it's such a small amount of money that it's only good to buy napkins, then why aren't you still doing it?
Make a cocktail named after him and sell it for $25.
People will buy it.
Good.
Yep.
Now, get a cup with his image on it. For 1 year, do like a souvenir cup with his image on it. Pay the family a huge bunch of money for 1 year, and then you can be done with it, because it's a seasonal cup. No one will ask where it is the next year, and then you don't have to pay the Calluses any more money if that's really what you're worried about, John.
Well, that's what he's saying. He said he's not worried about that. He's saying that was a pittance. That's not the reason they were doing it. The reason they were doing it wasn't so they could stop paying the Callis money. It was so that they could get the Ghost money. And that's the point. It's like they couldn't get the Ghost money without taking Harry's name off it. And that was the trade-off there.
And you know what? Like I said, go out and get a player with that money, you know, in some form or another, and you'll never hear about this again. So, like, maybe a response wasn't necessary at all. This does kind of feel like he was already rolling his eyes at people and just wanted to come out the gate with, like, I knew you people would have a problem with this kind of attitude. And that's where you lose me, man. We spent a good part of this offseason getting asked really stupid, disingenuous questions by the Phillies. This is really flying in the face of my whole smooth spring argument from a couple minutes ago. But even so, the Dave Dombrowski, well, what did you want us to do? Let Kyle Schwarber go for no reason kind of thing. It's like, stop talking to people like they're idiots. That's the problem. Your tone is the problem. Stop it.
Yeah. All right. I think we've got this subject, this topic, all nestled into bed now. We'll see if there's anything else they want to rip from our hearts in Citizens Bank Park during the course of the year and replace with a corporate sponsor. But in the meantime, let's get to our 2026 Phillies Major League Baseball preview extravaganza. And let's we'll start division by division, and we'll go through the wild card teams. We'll go through the award winners, and then at the very end, we'll give our NLCS, ALCS, and World Series picks, which is, of course, where we will then more or less discuss where we think the Phillies are going to finish up this year. But let's start in the National League East. Let's talk about who we think is going to win this division. According to Fangraphs, right now, the Mets are the favorites to win. They have a 38% chance of winning the division, followed by Atlanta at 36%. The Phillies are at 24%. And then you've got the Marlins at 1%. The Nationals have a 0% chance of winning the NL East. So, Justin, let me start with you. Who's winning the NL East?
Wow. Staggeringly unprepared for this very obvious question. I will say that I'm going... My thoughts on this have really kind of jostled a bit. I would say even in the last 48 hours. I'm going to have the Phillies winning it again. I'm going to go back on, I think, a promise I made at the beginning of the offseason. I'm going to say the Phillies have the best shot here, honestly, at winning the NL East. Now, the statistics say differently, but I don't think the Braves have that bounce back. They seem to be, you know, it's not the Ronald Acuñas and the Austin Rileys showing up on the injured list right now, but there is a pileup on the Braves roster of injuries pitching right now that is definitely going to impact their season. Already, it's going to impact their season. Even somebody like AJ Minter being out to the end of April could impact their season. But like, that's just one out of several. Spencer Schwellenbach, Spencer Strider. I mean, like, there's a pileup. So I'm not really worried about the Braves. And as far as the Mets go, you know, there was some the additions they made for their rotation felt a lot more intimidating when they were making them. And now in the harsh light of spring, it just starts to feel like, yeah, they still kind of have this stunted, abbreviated approach to their starting pitching that I just don't think made it that much stronger. And I don't think you can argue who has the best rotation in this division once again, even with Ranger Suarez playing in the AL East. So I still trust the Phillies to win the NL East, honestly. I'm going to say that, and that's my pick.
All right, Liz, what do you think?
I'm going to go with the Mets. I do completely agree that their rotation is bad. That the rotation at least isn't probably where they want it to be.
Yeah, I didn't say bad, just for the record.
Yeah, that's where I'm saying. That's where I'm changing. I'm just like, I didn't mean bad. Like, their rotation may not be where they want it to be to start the season, but they've got hitting. Adding Bo Bichette, I mean, is a big addition, and you add that to Lindor and Soto if he has a bounce back season, which is entirely possible.
I just had a follow up question. Do you feel like Bo Bichette obviously was pretty definitive as far as the Phillies and Mets off seasons for a couple of weeks there, at least? His pretty clear indication that he's not, you know, super interested in staying with the Mets long term. You know, you got the opt-outs were like the big part of that deal. Do you feel like that plays a role in output, I guess? Like, you know, a team brings in a superstar and adds to their lineup. And, you know, obviously he's Bo Bichette, so he's going to be an asset for them and everything. But the fact that he's not, you know, when Bryce Harper came here and was like, I have always dreamed of walking down Broad Street and looking at the and then, you know, contrast that with Bo Bichette being like, you know, getting asked the question at his press conference, hey, do you think you're just going to opt out after 1 year, and just being like, I'm looking at his agent who was like, yeah, let's just move on. There's a difference there. I mean, is the buy-in, I guess, the lack of a buy-in that's a little colder, you know, like, is that going to play a role in Bo Bichette's success or lack of success in New York?
I think he's going to figure that out. He's never played anywhere else but the Blue Jays. And now he's going to learn whether or not he's able to perform without that kind of with that kind of commitment. If you're just playing somewhere for a year, you're doing it to get an outlandish amount of money and to put, a good year on your stats before you can get a big deal from somewhere, the deal that you really want. So I'll be honest, I'm not sure. He's always been sort of this staid. I mean, he's not really the most emotive guy, right? He doesn't seem to be.
I think the thing that's going to be interesting for him is he played his entire career in Toronto, which is not exactly a high-pressure sports city. And now you are basically going to the most pressurized, you think Philadelphia is a tough place to play, the most pressurized sports city in America, playing a new position for a team that is mercurial, to say the least. And so there is a scenario where things go really wrong for Bo Bichette. But if he gets off to a good start, I don't necessarily think it's going to be the contract. I do think there's a chance the city could get to him, especially on a one-year deal where he feels like, and he does have the comfort of knowing that if he wants to stay, he can. So it's not like he has to perform in order to earn his next contract like he did last year in Toronto when he played very well, had a career season as a pending free agent. So I think it's more the pressure of New York and the just being in that spotlight that I think is going to be really interesting for him.
Yeah, I mean, he has a bad April, and then somebody digs up that clip from his press conference, and that starts getting circulated again, and things suddenly start going, pretty south for Bo Bichette. But whatever, just a question I had.
Fun thought to have.
Him, but yes, very fun.
Okay, for us, potentially, yeah. And I'll pick. I did not at the beginning of the spring. I was not going to pick the Phillies to win the division. But as I watched the Atlanta Braves kind of fall apart a little bit, and I just, I have a hard time picking the Mets, a team that finished 13 games behind the Phillies a season ago. I'm going to say the Phillies win their third straight National League East title. I like that they've got the strongest starting rotation. I think it's the best bullpen that Rob Thompson has ever had since he took over as manager. And the bats are going to be what the bats are going to be. And I wrote a story for the Good Fight this week. They had the fifth highest OPS in baseball last year, just overall. And over the final 2 months, they had the number one slugging percentage after the All-Star break, and they had the second highest OPS after the All-Star break. So we forget how great that team was playing, even down to the final game of the season. Like they were in the zone the whole season, and it just fell apart in October. But I think right now they're the strongest team in the National League East. And I think if you're looking for I think the Marlins are going to be a little bit tougher this year. I don't think they're anywhere close to a playoff team necessarily, but they're going to be they're not going to be a walkover team like they have been in recent seasons. So we'll just kind of have to see how they do.
There is a little more Marlins love out there, even from national outlets, I got to tell you.
Yep. Seen a little bit more of that. All right, let's move on to the National League Central. According to Fangraphs, the Cubs are the favorites to win this division, 35.5%. The Pirates, the Pittsburgh Pirates, ladies and gentlemen, have the second highest odds to win the division, and they're not far behind Chicago. 27.9%, nearly a 28% chance to win the division. That's better than the Brewers in third place at 24.5%. The Reds, they have them in fourth at 8.5%, and the Cardinals have a 3.6% chance to win the division. So, Liz, I'll start with you this time. Who's winning the NL Central?
It's definitely not going to be the Pirates. If I have to eat those words, I'll do it, but my guess is I won't have to. I'll go with the Cubs. They had a surprising season last year. I don't think it ended up going as well as they wanted it to by the end. They kind of started flagging a bit at some point, I know. But I think they have the goods to actually win the division this year.
So Brewers. Who did you say, Liz? The Cubs? You said the Cubs?
Cubs, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
What did the Brewers do this? Was their biggest move this offseason trading Freddie Peralta to the Mets?
Pretty much.
What did they get? I mean, and I know that's the endless question about the Brewers, and then they finish in first place anyway. But I think it's tough to argue against the Cubs this year. Alex Bregman, the signing I keep forgetting about happened, but Alex Bregman going to the Cubs is like a big part of that. And I think more of the mystery in the NL Central is, what is with all of this love for the Pirates? Look, I get Paul Skenes and the other pitching they have coming up through the pipeline. And what do you want to give them? Like Brian Reynolds, I guess, you know, but the Brandon Lau deal is just being held up as this like great reason to believe in the Pirates. And they love telling you it was a three-team deal. Like they're impressed the Pirates figured out they could pull off a deal with more than one team at a time.
They can count to three, guys.
But like Brandon Lau, Ryan O'Hearn, no offense to those guys, but like those are B-list additions to a team that could really use an A-list offensive presence. And unless I'm forgetting somebody really important, like I love O'Neill Cruz, but the whole narrative with him is when's it going to lock in? When are all five tools going to be present at the same time? So I don't really understand why the Pirates are suddenly getting all of this love because of acquiring Brandon Lau. Maybe they're better than last year. Not maybe. I do think they'll be better than last year. And I guess in these central divisions, there's always a second place to claim because you never know, like, who's going to just fall away or whatever. But I've been a little surprised by that.
Well, I think Connor Griffin, there's a lot of people who expect him to be kind of a superstar right away. In his rookie season. And he's going to start Connor the Griffin. Season in the minors, but he'll be up quickly. And there's a real chance that he's the National League Rookie of the Year. I think he's probably, I know Nolan McLean's a popular pick there, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if Connor Griffin, the number one prospect in baseball, is with the team very quickly and making an impact with the bat. So they went out and they got Ryan O'Hearn, and I know he's not a sexy name, but O'Hearn does provide some good pop in the lineup. And I guess, you know, O'Neill Cruz, Brian Reynolds, you know, they did sign Marcell Ozuna as a DH, and Ozuna does give you some more pop from the right side. So the lineup does look a little deeper. And with Paul Skeens, you know, you've got the front runner for the Cy Young Award. So I agree with, I mean, I think the Pirates are going to be better this year, but I agree with you. I don't think they're winning the division, and I don't really see them going to the playoffs yet, but they're coming. I think the Pirates are coming because they do have, I think I've seen some places that they might have like the top farm system in baseball right now. So
it's not,
I'll believe it when I see it.
I mean, could easily be wrong. It's just you see this stuff. It's like the Red Sox last year, you know, made the moves they made, and suddenly everybody was putting them in the World Series, which felt like, again, another overreach. But it happens every spring.
Talk about the – and I'm going to go with the Cubs, too. I forgot to give my pick. I'm going to also go with the Cubs. I think that's a fairly easy one, to be perfectly honest with you. We'll go to the National League West, and I'll lead off with this one. I'm going to go out on a limb here, guys. I'm going to go out on a limb. Bold take. LA Dodgers. I like that. I like the looks of them this year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they really seem to have really figured something out in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, you haven't heard quite that much about it, but yeah, no, I mean, you know, ESPN's calling it one of the best rosters ever assembled. It's the Dodgers. The bar is 110 wins. You know, find a way past them in the playoffs. It's the Dodgers.
And Liz, I assume you're going with the Dodgers as well.
Oh yeah.
Can I say the most, maybe one of the most infuriating storylines of the spring involves the Los Angeles Dodgers, and it is the complete and utter meltdown of Roky Sasaki.
Well, I was going to mention that.
His inability to, in any way, perform like a major league pitcher. The one time in his life so far where he has completely owned major league hitters just happened to be in October of last year as the unhittable multi-inning closer against the Phillies and against everybody else. But now, where was this Roky Sasaki in October? I don't think it's a stretch to say if Roky Sasaki doesn't do what he did for the Dodgers in the NLDS against the Phillies, I don't think they win, because then
now
you've got to rely
like
on that
John Middleton.
Well, yeah, that's right. But I mean, that bullpen was so weak and he swooped in and saved them. Like, I just think it's one of those things where you're just like, the playoffs are a crapshoot. I mean, it's,
They had their rotation healthy too. They had to go to the bullpen less. So the whole plan of getting into that bullpen changed when not only did you not have as many opportunities to get into it, because for the first time all season, all their pitchers were healthy, but also when you got there, somebody was pitching, like Sasaki was pitching well for the first time. So it was a couple of things.
Don't destroy my narrative, Justin.
I'm saying you don't have to think. I'm trying to help you. You don't have to think this way. You can detach that train car and live free.
All right. All right.
That's a great metaphor.
On Fangraphs has the Dodgers with an 89.8% chance to win the division. That's the highest number in baseball, obviously.
Seems a bit low.
Well, they have the Giants at 3.9%, the Diamondbacks at 3.8%, the Padres at 2.5%, and the Rockies at 0%.
Got the D-backs finishing over the Padres. John, you agree with that? I don't agree with that.
Yeah, I think I kind of do. The Diamondbacks over the... No, I have the Padres ahead of the Diamondbacks, personally. I do. I think, and we'll get to our wild card picks in just a second, but I do not have the Diamondbacks as a playoff team. I don't trust Zach Gallen yet, you know, and the rest of that Diamondbacks pitching staff. They do have a decent offense, but the whole Ketel Marte offseason drama, I'm just kind of curious to see how that plays out for the Diamondbacks this year. All right, let's go through our wild cards then. So you heard all the division percentage predictions there that I laid out. So let's go with NL wild card one. Justin, who do you think takes the top wild card spot?
Mets. In my universe, it'll be the Mets. Can't give them nothing. You know, got to leave some garbage out for the Mets to eat. And for me, that's this wild card pick.
Fair enough. Liz?
I'm going with the Phillies.
Okay, Phillies in the top wild card spot. And I've got the Mets also as my top wild card team. Liz, who do you have as the second wild card team?
The Padres as my second wild card team, I think. Yeah, I'll go with the Padres. I feel like the second and third are kind of interchangeable, really. I mean, they're all almost interchangeable.
Right, they kind of are. They kind of are. But yeah, the Padres as the second. I do not have the Padres. Oh, I didn't give mine. I have the Mets as the top wild card team, and I've got the Braves as the second wild card team. I think they'll figure it out enough to get that second wild card. And Justin, who do you have as the second wild card?
My second wild card, I'm giving to the Padres.
Okay. Well, all three of us have the Padres as a wild card team because I have them as my number three. Liz, who's your number three?
I don't want to give it to Atlanta, but I think I have to. I think it'll be another NL East. I think it'll be an NL East heavy year.
Three from the East. Not on yet. It's happened before.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to do. I feel like given the Braves that well, I mean, I feel like got to do something different. I'm not into the Brewers this year. You know, you don't have to be. And they're right down there with like kind of the Diamondbacks, same kind of level. So I feel like the Braves, because from Ronald Acuna power alone, with him being healthy, he's got a decent shot of making of being the National League MVP, even if the Braves don't make the playoffs. So I'm giving them the third slot.
And I thought about the Pirates in the third spot, but I just got to see it. They've been too bad for so long. All of a sudden think they're going to be a playoff team. And it's a lot to ask a rookie, like even one as good as Connor Griffin, to come in and all of a sudden be a superstar in his first year. Come talk to me next year about Pittsburgh. But they do have a lot of good young pitching talent, and it'll be a better team this year for sure.
I was ready to give the Reds some love, and then Hunter Green got hurt, and I just feel like that's it.
Yep. All right, let's move over to the American League, and we'll go to the AL East. Right now, Fangraphs has the Yankees as the favorites to win this division at 37%, the Red Sox at 24%, the Blue Jays, the defending AL champs, are at 18%, with the Orioles at 13%, and the Rays at 6.5% to win the division. Justin, who do you have coming out on top? I think this is the toughest division in baseball right now.
Yeah, I think so. I'm going to go with the Yankees, disgustingly enough. But I feel like that's the choice. Everybody else is. Everybody else feels like they're going to be fighting a battle. Even the Blue Jays, even the defending league champs, I think are being viewed as a team that's not a sure thing as far as like success goes. They have a couple of key injuries to start this season too, and some of them are to key guys from that postseason run. So. I think the Yankees are best set up to just show up and be like, yeah, let's pick up where we left off. The Orioles are trying to prove something. The Red Sox are trying to prove something. The Blue Jays will be trying to prove something. And the Rays are just happy to be home inside playing baseball again. So I'm going to go with the Yankees.
Liz, what say you?
I'll agree. Yankees, yeah, they are a more complete team than either the Blue Jays or the Red Sox, I think.
Baseball's more fun when the Yankees are good but not winning the World Series.
Yes.
It means they've let everyone down at some point. Their fans.
That's great.
Down.
That's great. And I've got the Yankees as well. It is a tough call. If there's an American League team that most mirrors the Phillies, it's the Yankees in some of the strengths that they have and some of the weaknesses and some of the offseason that they had. Yankees fans were up in arms about how the Yankees ran it back this offseason. And so if you're looking at the Spider-Man meme, you know, or they're pointing at each other, it's Yankees and Phillies here in 2026 in very similar situations.
There really weren't a lot of re-signings in baseball this year. The Phillies were responsible, it feels like, for most of them, for key players. And then the Yankees brought back Cody Bellinger. Like, that's almost the entire list.
Yeah, that's true. And they have some guys coming back from injury at some point. Gerrit Cole should be back. Carlos Rodon should be back in a couple of months. So that starting rotation, which is already pretty good, could get better as the middle of the season rolls around. AL Central. Let's look at Fangraphs once again, and it shouldn't be a surprise. The Tigers are at the top of the pack at a 45.5% odds to win the division. The Royals are at 29%, the Twins at 16%, the Guardians at 8.5%, and the White Sox, they're not at zero, gang. They made some moves. They had some fun this offseason with Manutaka coming in there and a couple other things. They're at 0.6%, half a percent chance to win the American League Central. Liz, who do you have winning the AL Central?
I'll go with the Tigers. They had a very tragic end of season run that kept them out of the playoffs. Or no, it didn't keep them out. It kept them out, kept them from winning the AL Central, which they'd held for quite a while. So, I'll go with the Tigers. They're fun.
And then the Tigers rallied in that playoff series.
That was
wild. A wild finish. I will also take the Tigers. Tarek Skubal anchors a rotation that's just really hard to beat. And I'm not enamored with the other teams in that division. As much as I've always loved the Royals, I think the Tigers are better than them right now. Justin, what do you think?
Also said the Tigers. My question is, obviously you don't talk about the Tigers without talking about Tarek Skubal, but I've also seen it across, you know, the landscape that some people really sat on the Mets trading for Tarek Skubal at the trade deadline this year. But if the Tigers are good enough to win that division, I mean, like, does that not mean a disaster has happened to the Tigers? Because usually when you're talking about that, you're talking about a team that's at the end of its run and they're ready to offload these stars, but the Tigers aren't. They shouldn't be ready to do that. And if they're contending in July and trade Tarek Skubal, how does that work?
I don't know.
Not going to happen. No. That's just not going to happen. I mean, I can't imagine.
Wishful thinking.
And if the Mets do that, the players they would have to give up could hollow them out. I mean, I know they've got good prospects, but goodness gracious, that's
dumb.
It doesn't make any sense from, and there's no logic to that from either side to them happening. Tarek Skubal's not going anywhere at the trade.
My bold prediction on Baseball Prospectus was that the Mets do trade for Tarek Skubal and then miss the playoffs anyway.
I like that bold prediction just from a common standpoint. That's fantastic.
Yes.
You don't have to explain how it happens with these bold predictions. You can just say whatever you want.
Exactly.
That's what makes it bold.
That's right. I mean, I make 10 bold predictions for the good fight, and there's no chance all 10 of them could happen because some of them are in direct conflict with one another. But
the Phillies can't go to the moon.
Right.
And if all 10 of John's bold predictions come true, then they can't cancel baseball next season. I saw that in writing.
Yeah, that's it. I was in the Bidelands. I put it in italics at the bottom.
That's a John Stoneness guarantee.
That's right. AL West, the Mariners are the heavy favorites to win this division, of course. 59.8, let's call it 60% chance, according to Fangraphs. The Rangers are at 20%, the Astros 12.5%, the Athletics at 6.5%, and the Angels at just over 1% to win the American League West. I've got the Mariners winning this division again. They really probably should have gone to the World Series. They had that Game 7 in hand, and it slipped away. I really want them to get to a World Series at some point. And these are the best teams. I mean, the 2001 team was also very, very, very good. But these teams have a great shot to get there. But we'll see. I don't know. That was a crushing loss last year. Justin, AL West champ.
It's more or less impossible to not pick the Mariners. This division, you know, the Astros are trending downward. I don't think you got a lot of threats here to the Mariners, and they just happen to be possibly one of the best Mariners teams in history. They're certainly, you know, the top of anybody's American League power rankings. And so, yeah, I'm with you, John. It's just kind of like time for the Mariners. And I can't imagine if it's not the Mariners winning the AL West, then some sort of abysmal failure has taken place. I asked Chris and Mike this on Absolutely Hammered last night, but have you seen the inevitable Cal Raleigh, Randy Arozarena, like handshake pick yet? Has that surfaced? Because I'm assuming that's going to happen. That has to happen. They have to be like, oh, yeah, friendships, you know, everything's fine. You know, that all's old news story. But if anything's going to make the Mariners implode, that might be something that has to do with it. But until then, it's the Mariners owning the AL West.
Well, for those of us who just watched the Philadelphia Eagles, we know that when two star players are not getting along, it has no effect on the field whatsoever. So,
right. I feel silly for bringing it up.
Well, you should. Liz, AL West winners.
I'll take the Mariners as well.
I was going to say, after all that, you might not be able to say anything but the Mariners.
No, I don't think I can. Not that I wanted to, but yeah, Mariners.
All right, AL wild card number one, Justin. Who's getting the top wild card spot in the American League?
I'm back, baby. It's Baltimore Orioles time in the wild card.
Okay.
The time, you know, that was a blip. Getting past it, getting through it, disappointing. But these are young guys, and every year is a little more experience, and they're all maturing, and they've made some, you know, Pete Alonso is the actual player I wanted them to go get. It wasn't just an ambiguous, they need to sign an A-lister. It was Pete Alonso is going to play real well in Baltimore, and I think that's going to be the case. He is going to be an excellent fit for that team, and they're going to be better. They're going to be better, and I think, yeah, it's back to the postseason for Baltimore. I'm giving them wild card spot number one.
All right, so Justin's got the O's in that spot. Liz, what do you think?
I think I'll take the Red Sox as my first one. Yeah, so the Red Sox. They're a solid team, and their addition of Ranger Suarez, who I love and will miss every single day. I think that's pretty smart for them
Roman
to do.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there. Roman Anthony's going to be a superstar.
Yeah,
I mean that's a good team. Jaron Duran is still there. Willie Abreu is still there. I mean they've got a lot of talent. I know they lost Bregman. I think they'll figure it out without him around. But I have the Blue Jays as the top wildcard team heading into 2026. Doesn't mean I think they're going to go any less further in the playoffs necessarily. I got Blue Jays as AL wildcard one. Liz, who do you have as AL wildcard number two?
I have the Baltimore Orioles.
Yes, to Elizabeth. All right. I've got the Red Sox as my number two wild card team. So I've got them one tick down from you, Liz. Justin, what's your number two team?
I was honestly going to pick based on what Liz said. She said the Red Sox. So my other AL East team is going to be the Blue Jays. I think the Red Sox deserve acknowledgement, but I don't want to give them too much. So I'm going to go Blue Jays.
Okay. And then for my third wildcard team, I'm keeping it in the AL East. I'm going with the O's as my third wildcard team. So I've got three AL East teams winning the three wildcard spots, four American League East teams going to the postseason. I do like what the O's did this offseason, and they do just still have a lot of talent on that team. Justin, who's your number three?
Three, I went with the Royals. You know, I'm seduced by the play of Bobby Witt in the World Baseball Classic.
Hard not to be.
Just most recently, you know, and he's just an incredible player to watch. And, you know, in these central divisions, sometimes you only need one really good player to win because they are so very, very soft. And they only got softer with the Mets ripping their own, or the Twins, excuse me, ripping their own guts out last season. So, yeah, I'm thinking the Royals for wild card spot number three.
And Liz, what about you? What's your number three?
I am also going with the Royals, mostly because I could not send four AL East teams to the playoffs. I couldn't do it. Could not do it.
Yeah, I didn't like doing it, but I really did. I just didn't love anybody from the Central. I mean, maybe if I thought about it, everyone always undersells the Guardians, and the Guardians always kind of figure out a way to win like 89 to 91 games and win a round of the playoffs and scare the heck out of the ALDS or ALCS winner. You know, it's just kind of what they do. But, and Jose Ramirez is the most underrated player in baseball.
Has been for years somehow.
Yeah, I just think the ceiling for the Blue Jays, Red Sox, and Orioles are higher than the Guardians. So that's why I'm going with all those AL East teams. It's going to be, it'll be weird if it happens. It generally speaking doesn't happen that way. All right, so let's move on to our end of season award winners. NL MVP, Justin, who do you got winning the National League MVP award?
I've got Ronald Acuña Jr. winning the MVP. Yeah, just a player who's always capable of doing that. Coming off a World Baseball Classic victory, I think he's feeling it. And like I said, regardless of how the Braves do this year, Ronald Acuña Jr. is the kind of player who can do that. So I think he comes back in a big way this season, takes the MVP.
Liz, who do you got?
If I believe in one thing, it's the lack of creativity among the beat writer set. I think it'll probably be Ohtani.
That's very fair. There generally speaking isn't a whole lot of creativity there. And as such, I agree with you. I think it's going to be Ohtani. I mean, he's just, the problem is that he's so good, and that he just continues to do things that defy anything we've ever seen in Major League Baseball, that it's, even with Mike Trout, when he was doing his thing, we've never seen anybody do what Shohei Ohtani is doing. And there just doesn't seem to be any Ohtani fatigue at this point. So I agree with you. I'm going to stick with Ohtani.
I have some.
You have a little bit of Ohtani fatigue?
I do.
Oh, yeah. I made O'Neill Cruz an MVP candidate this year in my baseball prospectus picks instead of Shohei Ohtani. That's how fatigued over Shohei Ohtani I am. He's getting enough love. He doesn't need it from me.
Fair enough.
Fair.
Fair enough. I got you.
Also, I don't want to give it to him. So, you know,
that's fine, too. Yeah, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. And we don't have to. We don't have to do that.
It's our show.
That's right.
If he was such a great MVP, why were the Phillies, a team that didn't even make it to the World Series, able to contain him so effectively? Checkmate, Dodgers. Moving on.
That's right. All right. NL Cy Young, Liz, who do you got?
Oh, gosh, I am shockingly unprepared for this one. Someone's going to have to go next because I can't remember any pitchers
then.
At the moment.
I mean,
thank you.
I'll go Paul Skeens. I'm not going to be creative here. I mean, everybody's just going to give it to him. Don't make that face at me, Justin. That's the consensus pick, and I'm not. I mean, I like Sanchez. I like, Logan Webb's a good name out there. You know, they've got there's definitely other possibilities. Sale, I mean, I know is going to get some love probably, but I think it's Skeens is the best pitcher in the National League right now. So that's where I'm going.
Christopher Sanchez finishes third, but your winner of the NL Cy Young this year will be Jesus Luzardo.
Oh, boy.
Oh, look at you, sir. I love it.
Managed to get through that whole thing without saying Paul Skeens' name once. Look at that.
Except for right now.
just being a consensus pick and everything. But I guess some people just don't go with the crowd and succumb to peer pressure as easily as others.
Liz, do you have a name now?
Liz, ignoring that and moving on.
I always forget whether if Paul Skeens or which league Tarek Skubal and Paul Skeens belong to. I always get them mixed up, which is why I thought I had no one to choose. I think Paul Skeens probably gets it. Whether or not he deserves it, because here's the thing. Who deserves the awards is irrelevant. Who gets the awards is whoever the writers like the most. And they're all obsessed with Paul Skeens. They're all obsessed. Obsessed with him. The amount of stuff, like the number of Paul Skeens featurettes that were shown during the World Baseball Classic, threatened somehow, the very ecosystem of MLB. There was just so much of it. I'm really tired of him, but I really think he's probably going to win because I don't think the writers have no creativity in their brains, just none.
Love for Zach Wheeler to get back in time to make a push for it. And finally, wouldn't that be ironic in this season when he starts off with so much uncertainty if this is the season he's able to pull it off? National League Rookie of the Year. I'm going, I think there's really two guys here that are at the top of the list. That's Nolan McClain and Connor Griffin. I think there'll probably be some people who write in, maybe one of the Phillies guys. For me, I'm going with Connor Griffin. I think Nolan McClain's going to have a decent season for the Mets, but this kid who looks like he's just going to wail on the ball when he comes up and plays for Pittsburgh. So I'm going to take the kid from Pittsburgh here. Justin, who do you got?
I already used my homer pick on the Cy Young, so I'll say Connor Griffin too. But I will say that even though I was the only person on Baseball Prospectus to give Justin Crawford a first place vote for Rookie of the Year, two people voted for Andrew Painter. So it wasn't, I wasn't, you know, just alone on an island thinking the Phillies might have something in their rookie crew this year. I will also make a point that I said on Absolutely Hammered, which was that in regards to Nolan McLain winning the NL Rookie of the Year award, ESPN said that this spring it was McLain to whom Mark DeRosa turned to take the ball against Venezuela in the WBC final. They were using this as evidence as him winning the NL Rookie of the Year award, when in fact that was a game they lost and also was based on a Mark DeRosa decision. And I don't think anybody should be, you know,
nobody's hanging their hat on that
based
one.
On that. So no. I'm going with Griffith over McLain.
I'm going to go with Griffin too, because I'm tired of pitchers winning the Rookie of the Year award. I love some offense. Give me some offense. Connor Griffin, all the way.
I will say this too. There's also a world in which Andrew Painter does have a better season than Nolan McLain as rookie.
Absolutely.
Pitcher. And that's something that most people are thinking, but I think that is absolutely something that's possible.
This all is right, why it's better to lurk than be in the spotlight.
Mm-hmm. 100% right. All right. AL MVP, Justin, who do you got?
My AL MVP is, of course, sorry, I lost my spot, Julio Rodriguez. I think this year you're skipping the early season slump, and I think his success and like point-to-point success across the season this year is going to be a huge part of the Mariners' overall success. So I think for them to succeed, he's got to do that, and I think he's going to do it.
All right, Liz.
Man, I really don't want it to be Aaron Judge again. So I'll say Cal Raleigh. Yeah, if only because he's not Aaron Judge, and I'm tired of Aaron Judge, because he can hit a lot of home runs, but I don't know. I've never found him to be a very compelling player with a lot of holes in his game. Again, I think writers get obsessed with players who like they were super obsessed with Giancarlo Stanton for a long time. And it's because he's this huge, hulking, massive guy who can hit huge homers. It's like
so
the
was
only
Ruben
thing.
Amaro. So was Ruben Amaro.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Oh, my God. I memory hold that whole thing. Ugh.
He was so into him. Oh, man.
My brain hurts. He was so into him. So I'll say Cal Raleigh.
Cal Raleigh, it would be interesting to see. I mean, he's not going to repeat what he did last year, but we'll see how many he's able to pile up here in 26. And I'll go with Bobby Witt Jr. of the Royals. Just love what he's showing us so far in his career. Best is yet to come. AL Cy Young, I'll go first here on this one. I'm going to go with Tarik Skubal. Not a big surprise. That's why I'm going to go first. Yeah. It's pretty standard. Everybody agree, Tarik Skubal? Any differences?
Tarik Skubal.
All right. AL Rookie of the Year? Any thoughts?
I think the Tigers clean up here, too. I'm looking at Kevin McGonigal.
Very popular pick.
Yeah. I remember him because he has a great name. Mm-hmm. I love his name. I'll agree with that.
Well, and local product, right? Philly Philly area product, Kevin McGonigal. I'm going to go with Munetaka Murakami. Why not? Give the Japanese guy who plays for the White Sox. Let's do that. Have a little fun with that. All right. Let's do a real quick lightning round here. How long will the Phillies' longest winning streak of the season be, Justin?
Seven games.
Ooh. Liz?
12.
I will go with, just to be different, I'll say 8. The Phillies' longest losing streak, Liz?
10.
10-game losing streak.
Oh,
holy
no,
cow.
Wait. That's like a really long. That's really long.
Yeah,
I'll say
nullifies the 12-game win streak. They go on.
I mean, here's the thing. The Phillies have done that to us more than once.
That's true. And hey, right. You know, they might win 12 games in a row more than once. So
they definitely could. But no, I'll say 6 games is probably a more realistic number.
I was going to say
Justin,
5.
Justin, what do you think?
I think they do it a couple of times, but they lose 5 in a row, and it never gets worse than that. That was their strength last year, if you recall. They never let things snowball too much.
I'll grant you that. I'll say 5 as well. All right, Phillies, major league rank in runs scored this year. I'm going to say they finish in seventh place in runs scored. Justin, where? What do you think? Sixth, Liz.
I'll say fourth.
All right, Phillies rank in home runs. Justin, where do they rank in baseball and home runs?
Eighth.
Eighth, Liz.
I forgot. They don't have more than one Kyle Schwarber. I'll say 10th.
And I will put them at 9th. Let's split the difference there with you. How many All-Stars do the Phillies have in 2026?
I think Bryce Harper winds up being the legend pick, whether he's playing well or not. So I think he goes. And I'll say 4.
4. Liz, how many Phillies All-Stars?
I'll also say 4.
Hell, I'll give them to you. Chris Sanchez, Jesus Luzardo, Bryson Stott.
Okay. And Bryce Harper. All right. Bryson Stott is an all-star. All right. I'm going to say 5 all-stars. I think 3 of the starters go. I think Joan Duran gets a spot. And I'll give Kyle Schwarber a spot on the National League all-star team. And then Phillies wins. How many wins do the Phillies get this year, Liz?
I'm going to say 93 games.
Justin?
90, even.
I'm going to go with 95 to win the National League East. All right, who is your NLCS? What's your NLCS? Say the words, John. NLCS pick.
Phillies over Dodgers.
Oh, okay. Liz?
I'll take Phillies, sure, over Dodgers. I never know who they're going to play. And so I'll just say, I mean, the Phillies win. How's that?
Okay. Yeah, right. Exactly. I've got Phillies over Cubs in the National League Championship Series. Who's your ALCS matchup there, Justin?
I'm going to say Mariners over Orioles.
Okay. Liz?
Mariners over Yankees.
Man, we are not going to be creative here at all. I've got the Mariners over the Yankees as well. And so we are all picking a Phillies Mariners World Series here. We did not plan this out, by the way, everybody. That's just how it's shaken out. Justin, World Series pick.
Mariners over Phillies.
Oh, no. Mariners over Phillies. The Mariners finally win the World Series.
I think it's a battle between two teams that are like, yeah, we just have to win. The point is to just win with what we like. We've got good teams that can win. Let's just do it. The Mariners get that juice. They get they're earlier in their phase than the Phillies are. And I'm just seeing a bittersweet end.
Liz, World Series.
I like that a lot. I think if the Phillies have to lose the World Series, not participate, but if the Phillies have to go to the World Series and lose, I would rather it be to the Mariners than anyone else. So let's go with that.
That would be easier. Yeah.
I think the juice from beating the Dodgers in the NLCS, it's not enough, but it's like that's what gets played up in the video yearbook. And then it's like a 2022 kind of World Series where it's like, oh, and then we got there and then just kind of
didn't really go that well.
Yeah.
I think if the Phillies get to the World Series against the Mariners, I don't think they lose to the Mariners. I don't think the Mariners beat them. I think it's like a Rays World Series in 2008. I think Phillies over the Mariners in the World Series. I think this is the year they finally get it done. I think this is the year they get it done.
I love it.
I don't know why I was, why I feel so much more optimistic than I did a month ago, but that's my pick. So there you have it, everybody. That is our baseball spectacular, Phillies Major League Baseball preview spectacular for 2026. I will post the results and our picks on social media with a link to this podcast when we normally do our promotion. So everybody can take a look at what we've done. In the meantime, let's wrap up with some quick final thoughts. Liz, anything quick to wrap up with?
Next year at Citizens Bank Park, Monty's Alley, brought to you by Wawa. Well, that's not my only thing. I would like to, I have an issue calling this opening day because it is not opening day. It's opening night and for two teams. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Come on. I hate this. I hate this. I hate what they do to it. I think it's really stupid. This is not opening day. It's opening night for two teams. I hate this. It is opening day on Thursday. Everybody get behind it.
Yeah, Yankees and Giants, I believe, play as the lone game on Wednesday night on Netflix,
woo-hoo.
I believe is what it is. So, yeah, it's definitely a little bit on the weird side.
Their broadcast team is not looking great either.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I'm pretty sure it was a Yankees Giants ball game on Netflix that happened right before the flood in the Bible. So,
right.
Yikes.
That's not good.
My final thoughts, you ask?
Yeah.
Well, like John said, yeah, there's a post over on The Good Fight that I was, yes, permitted to write. And that is all about Summer of the Cheap Wieners, which is a great early season. While you still got the juice for baseball and it's not sweated out of you by July, great time to read up on the 1941 Phillies in a book that people are calling genuinely enjoyable, but with a little surprise in their voice, which I find a little insulting, but that's okay. Also, there's a new episode of Absolutely Hammered over at the Hidden Season Patreon. That was our opening day episode. It's almost 2 hours long, so there's more than enough. But in that episode, we do our annual snake draft of teams we think will be the lousiest. So we're all drafting teams to with the intent of having the most collective losses among those teams.
I love it.
I don't know, man. Chris did a pretty good job this year. It's a real bummer. And he's also tomorrow on Baseball Prospectus, they'll be publishing my micro diary from the last few days of spring training down in Clearwater. Looking forward to seeing that go up. That'll be a lot of fun as well before the Phillies take the field for their opening day game against the Rangers.
Good stuff.
3 p.m., baby.
Yeah, but, and so we'll, Phillies take on the Texas Rangers at Citizens Bank Park, and it'll be Christopher Sanchez going up against Nathan Eovaldi in the Phillies opening day. Phillies have had some fun opening days here over the last few years, and so hopefully this is another one here in 2026, and you can read all of
Mackenzie
our...
Gore! No, Mackenzie
no
Gore!
No, Mackenzie Gore, that's right.
Yes, please.
Finally.
Please.
All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. And again, folks, make sure that you're checking us out on all the social media platforms. If you don't listen to us on Spotify, but you could head over and give us a follow there, that would be great. It does help us on the little search feature there so people can find the Phillies, best podcast in the world when they do a search for Phillies. And then we, of course, this podcast will be over at the WHYY YouTube channel as well. So make sure you subscribe to the WHYY YouTube channel so you can watch all of our roundtable editions of the podcast. And of course, now we are back and we will have some Phillies games to analyze for you for the rest of what we hope will be a very entertaining 2026 season. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.